Welcome. This week's show is sponsored by the Embroiderers Guild of America, and EGA is a community of stitch-minded people who inspire passion for the needle arts through education and the celebration of its heritage. And encourage you to join the EGA. You can learn more at egausa.org. I'm a member at large, and Jennifer just joined here just a few days ago. So do check that out. They're offering just a truckload of classes, online classes. They have current ones are Beginning Brazilian Dimensional Embroidery with Judy Caruso, the Creme de la Creme box from Curdy Biggs. Oh, that's one to check out. And then one that's coming soon is Geraniums by Marilyn Hazelwood. And then there are lightning rounds. Current lightning round registration ends December 1. There are four new classes available: How Does Your Garden Grow?, Perfectly Counted Crosses, Mark and Paint on Canvas and Fabric, and Roses. And then, of course, big plans getting put in place for the Magnificent Stitch, which will be the national seminar in 2021. That will be in Chicago and September 1 through September 5. And early registration began on September 1, and there's still plenty of time for you to sign up for the national seminar. So go to egausa.org to join and to register for the national seminar, and then spend some time checking out the various online classes. And then if you just have a few minutes, go to the gallery. That few minutes will extend into an hour, I guarantee you, just looking at the beautiful work there. So with that, we will now listen to our podcast with Celia J.E. of Celia J.E. Designs and Beaded Embroidery, three-dimensional beaded embroidery. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. And our artist this week, Cecilia Ajayi, and her business is Celia Jayi. Did I get that right?
Yeah, Celia Jayi, yeah.
Jayi. Well, welcome, however you say it. Welcome, Cecilia.
Thank you for having me.
We practiced, and I still didn't get it. Oh well. I tried.
It's okay.
I tried. So, all right, so we get to learn 3D bead embroidery. This is going to be fun.
Yeah.
I tripped across you. What was I was looking for, it must have been bead embroidery or something. I think I was actually looking for some instructions. And
okay.
You came up and it said 3D bead embroidery. And it's like, I got to know about this. Yeah, so fascinating work. So we get to learn about that. But as a former teacher, Miss Hall Hines was the one that kickstarted you. I got to know about her.
Oh, yeah. Well, I chose to specialize in textiles in secondary school. Because in secondary school, when you go into year 9, you have to kind of choose a specialism. So I was like, okay, I'll choose textiles. And I don't know, I've always kind of, because my grandma used to sew and my mum's into sewing and my auntie. So I was kind of like, okay, let me just test it out to see what it's like. And I remember my first lesson with her, like with everybody in the class, and she was just so tough, so strict. And it was like, everyone was like, oh, you don't want to be in her class, you're not going to pass. It's quite hard to please her, you know. And I remember thinking, oh, surely it's not that bad. And then she was the sort of teacher that she didn't give too much away. She didn't compliment your work. She didn't really like have too much of a say. So I remember doing some samples and everything in her class, and she kind of wasn't really amused with anything. So I was just like, you know what? I'm going to prove everyone wrong. I'm going to make this teacher love my work. I'm going to make this teacher give me an A. I'm going to work hard so that I can prove everyone wrong about this teacher. And bit by bit, I used to, you know, stay behind sometimes, come in early and practice at home some techniques. And bit by bit, the teacher started to warm to me. So I was just like, okay, maybe she's not so bad after all. And then eventually she started complimenting some of my pieces. She started liking it. And I guess our relationship kind of blossomed from there. And then in the end, I left textiles GCSEs with a grade A. So I was just like, you know what, if you kind of put your mind to something and you're determined that you want to do well in it and you want to really go get your teeth in it, then you'll make it and you'll do well in it. And that kind of just kickstarted my career. Well, not my career, my interest in textiles, because I was so determined to learn everything, to make sure to get it right in order to, you know, prove a point. And in the end, I realized I actually do enjoy it. I actually am good at it. I actually quite like it. And that's kind of where it started off.
That's really neat. It's always interesting to me because I had the second guy I worked for, editor of a magazine, and you described him to a T, really strict, no fun, grumpy. and I had that same reaction. The first article I edited, and this was back in the typewriter days. And then you turn it into him, and then he would go through and edit it. And that was with the blue pencil.
Okay.
And that thing came back just blue, just covered in blue. And I thought I knew what I was doing, you know.
Yeah.
But he sat down, and he was a crew cut, grumpy guy, you know, just absolutely no fun. And he sat down and he explained every single thing to me. And he was one of those guys like, okay, you made your mistakes. Don't make these again.
Yeah.
And I had that same reaction. All right, buddy, there's going to come a day here when I'm going to hand you a manuscript. You're going to read it and hand it back to me without a mark on it. And I did. And then I found the human side in him, and same kind of thing like you did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you stay in touch with her?
Unfortunately not. And funny enough, I always kind of mention her here and there in interviews. So I guess one day I'm going to have to kind of like look her up or something and be like, you know what? You're the one that motivated me to and opened my eyes to textiles. So hopefully one day I get to tell her that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because as a former teacher, that there's nothing more rewarding than hearing from a student that you made a difference for them. And
yeah.
Yeah. So then you had, from your aunt and your mother and your grandmother, you had a background in textiles, but it really just was there, just kind of dormant till you ran into this teacher.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And like my grandma used to like do some sewing and kind of like make some of her own clothes. And I never kind of took any interest in what she was doing. I knew that she was good at sewing, but it was not until like I actually started studying, like I did textiles in GCSE, that I was like, okay, grandma, I'm doing textiles now. You know how to like sew, you know how to do these things. Why don't you like let me learn, teach me some of your techniques, teach me how to do this and that. So I remember I used to grab a pen and paper, and anytime my grandma used to make some of her clothes and stuff like that, I used to just sit down and just like learn and absorb everything she was doing. And I guess also that was a way of, I guess I bonded a lot with my grandma then. Mm-hmm. And I used to get so upset anytime I would make a mistake with the sewing machine or anything would go wrong. I used to be like, oh, grandma, I really want to get this right. I really want to get this right. I really want this teacher to like me. And I guess with more and more practice, I eventually got it. Like they say, practice makes perfect. Right, I know that's cliche, but that's kind of like how it sort of started.
And so you really had two people in your life that made a difference for you. What is it about textiles that draws you? Is it the colors, the feel? What is it?
Initially, it was more so just kind of understanding how fabrics attach together, understanding the construction of clothing. It was more so that. It was not until when I kind of went to when I studied in college, when I did art and design, and I learned about cubism, I learned about art history, that I kind of started seeing textiles in a different form. And when I was in college, I also continued to study textiles there, and a lot of the projects that we was taught in college, they told you to experiment. They told you experiment with printmaking, experiment with tie-dye, experiment with hand embellishment. So that it was kind of there that I started seeing, you know what, textiles doesn't have to be a flat surface. Textiles can be 3D. And then my interest in like art history kind of like started influencing the way I kind of saw textiles. And then I started creating pieces that wasn't flat, wasn't, you know, just a piece of fabric that will just lay flat. I was like, okay, I'm really into things that are like three-dimensional. So I started kind of using the different techniques that I was taught in college in order to create fabrics that was three-dimensional.
So you had an art angle to you, an art interest all through school, and
when we started learn, I studied, because for college I studied textiles with critical and contextual studies, and then I did performing arts as well. So, but it was more of the textiles that I kind of really really enjoyed, because I was already good at it from secondary school, and then I had all this sort of influence with my grandma and my mom and my aunt. So it was kind of the one thing that kind of stood out to me, and learning more about art history just kind of was like, oh wow, this is an area that I'm so intrigued about. This is an area that I want to learn more. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I decided to further my education, and then I did a diploma in art and design. And that also intensified my passion and my kind of feel for embroidery and textiles. And then from there, I then went to university to get a master's in it. So it kind of just, I guess it was like a fluid progression, as I would say.
Boy, Miss Hines hooked you and you didn't give up, did you?
Yeah. It's just so weird how someone can just, you know, influence you in the littlest of ways, and it kind of impacts your whole life.
Right. Yep. Yeah, it's amazing. And then, and then you just cling to it, because that's the kind of thing where sometimes in your teen years and your early 20s, you get an interest like that, and then you kind of burn out and move on to something else. But the fire got lit and it hasn't gone out yet. So that's...
Yeah, of course.
But now, what is it that moves you from textiles to embroidery? I mean, what's that? Because you did some knitwork in the fashion industry and...
Yeah, like the way I kind of went into embroidery was after I graduated from university, I started playing, because I specialized in knitwear, and all the pieces that I created in my knitwear were all three-dimensional. So I already sort of took that sort of interest in like arts and sort of abstract style into my knitwear. And after graduation, I was just like, you know what? I still want to continue knitting. I don't want to stop and just kind of like, you know, just kind of give it up or something. So I started knitting again. I still had my knitting machine, and I still had my sewing machine and everything like that at home. So I started sewing, and then I have like a mini mannequin at home, and I started putting my fabric swatches of my knitted samples onto the mannequin. And I was like, you know what, this fabric swatches, they're quite boring. And then I was just like, okay, what can I do in order to jazz this item up? What can I do? And while looking through my textile supplies, I found a packet of beads that my mum had bought from, I don't know, boot sale, or I don't know where my mum had gotten them. I don't even know how it got into my beads box, my textiles box. So I was just like, okay, let me use some of these beads that my mum's gotten me. Let me put it on the fabric and see how it works. And then when I put it on the fabric, I had like that, oh, like wow moment, like, oh wow, this really, you know, increases the sort of the depth, the three dimension of the fabric that I was making. And then I started learning about beads and like the different effects, with beading, and how certain beads can add sparkle, certain beads can add light, certain beads can add depth. Certain beads can add shadowing effects to your pieces. So I was just like, you know what? So I went to my local supply stores, craft stores where they sell beads. So I picked out a variety of different types of beads, and I was like, okay, let me start testing these out and further understand how beads work. And through then, I was, I kind of, that's how everything kind of like it transitioned from knitting and just and fabric experimentation to then just kind of solely working with beads. I then started creating more pieces. I saw myself moving away from just fabric swatching to just working with beading, and that's kind of how my interest sort of grew. I'm the sort of person that once I like something, I like to explore more. I like to understand how it works. I like to develop myself into it and find out all the different possibilities around an item.
So as you progress through this with knit fabrics, then it sounds like the artist came out on you, and it became, wait a minute, I need to create art with this.
That's exactly, that's kind of how it started.
Interesting. Now, you grew up in London, near London,
Yeah, in London, yeah.
and the culture there influenced your art at all, or?
Yeah, of course, like I'm surrounded by, urban culture, arts and craft. There's loads of textile galleries, there's loads of museums around where I live. There's a re real street culture around where I live as well. So all of that, I guess, sort of, and I think the one thing that also influenced me the most was the fact that there was just so much craft stores. There were so much small boutiques and little gifts sort of shops that you can buy like handmade items and handmade supplies. So I was always, every time I would like either if I, because my university was in Brighton, and it was like about an hour and a half commute to get home. So when I would come home, sometimes I might walk past these stores, and I guess I started, going into them, looking around, seeing what was happening, and then obviously going to like museums, because when you're studying textiles and arts and craft, you're always encouraged to visit galleries and museums and stuff like that. So all of those sorts of things, I guess, inspired the artist within me.
Right. Well, it's interesting because I asked that because it's interesting to me if when I looked at your work, which I spent some time. You owe me a couple of hours. It's a very, I don't know if I can say it's a modern approach, but then particularly with your portraits, there's that historical bent to it. So there's a nice mix of creative, innovative, new with that historical influence. And I mean, it's just an interesting mix. And so I wondered if you hadn't spent a good deal of your time doing just that, going to museums and studying. And it sounds like every trinket store on the place in the city got hit by you.
I think it was just more so like when I was studying, especially after I finished my GCSE in secondary school and I went to college, and when we started learning about cubism and about, optical illusion and multiple perspective, because that was kind of what was intriguing to me about cubism, the fact that there can be this flat surface, but because of all the shadows, the lines, the way it's depicted, it kind of creates this, I don't know, this image of its own. And that kind of really inspired me. Like, I want my work to be, I want to be able to create work that has, multiple perspective, that it can be interpreted in any way and any form. And it's not down to me as the artist to say, okay, this is how it should look. But I kind of want my work to be playful so that it can have a meaning, different meanings to whoever sees it.
Right. No, I can see that, and it's the fun part of looking at your work. And but now you're going to do cubism with beads.
I don't know how, but I'm kind of
Way to
like,
go the easy route.
one thing I've taken from it is fragmentation. And if you see my work, you've noticed that a lot of the way I place my beads together, a lot of the way I kind of assemble my work, they're always kind of fragmented together via color or
Right.
via the shapes of the beads. It's always kind of like a jigsaw puzzle. So that cubist sort of style of working has kind of influenced the way I I create portraits and influence the way I create. I create beadwork in general.
Now, doing beads, because initially I thought, okay, she's taking a bunch of beads and gluing them on some surface,
No, you'll
and
have to.
not even close. You're bead at a time threading it. Yeah.
Yeah, individually, one by one.
Which is slow.
It's slow, but I guess when you love something, you love the process, you love the time that it takes to develop. It's not something like fast fashion that is a throwaway item, and then you fall in love with what you create because you know how much time it's taken.
Right.
So that's kind of how I sort of see my pieces when I start creating them.
I watched that one little short video where you're sitting on the floor, beating away, and boy, there's a nice, you're fast at it, obviously, but there's also a really nice rhythm to it. I could just kind of, I started feeling a rhythm as you were stitching there, and
Oh.
picking up the bead, putting it in place, it was interesting to see, because for me, to do beads as embellishment and needlework is tedious work, and
Yeah.
to get it just right and right in the right spot and all that, and because I mean I don't do enough of it to matter, but then I
Yeah.
wondered, how does somebody do who does nothing but beads do it? And then you could see the rhythm, you could see working the needle, grabbing that bead, and
I guess it's become second nature as well. Where I've been doing beadwork for a few years now, I've kind of learned how to adjust the needle, how to kind of pick them up, and where I've done quite a few of my artworks, I guess that every artwork that I create, it always lends into the next piece I create. So I guess that's what you're trying to say about the fluidity of my work.
Yes. Now talk to me, 'cause if I look at the pictures, it
Yeah.
looks like you have hills and valleys and
Yeah.
so on. Are those there, or is that an optical illusion? And if they're there, then how are you building those up?
No, there are there. There, you know how I've been talking about the whole fragmentation and multiple perspective. I really always try to incorporate that into my work. So I always make sure to create beadwork that has multiple layers, so that when you kind of look at it from different angles, you see different heights and depths. And I love that about, when I was talking about cubism, and when you see it's a flat surface, but because of how they've drawn it, that the way the lines, the way the shapes, it looks 3D. So that's the sort of effect that I always like to create with my beadwork.
But your work is actually
Yeah,
3-dimensional.
yes, of course, it's actually 3D, and that's literally through layering of beads and creating depth with the types of beads that I use.
Oh, so it's not some kind of padding underneath and then beads over the top.
No, it's all beaded.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Okay, so that immediately puts in my mind the challenge. I mean, beads are basically round and smooth.
Yeah,
The challenge of getting those to stay where you want them to stay, that's wow. There's a technical aspect to that.
but I guess also it's part of the beauty, like when I start a new piece, I never really kind of know how it's going to end. And I always kind of like, okay, I think I always sort of pick the colors that I want and the sort of bead types. And I never really know how it's going to look until I just start beading. I guess something just comes out of me, and this rhythm and this fluidity just kind of flows.
You're one of those artists. Okay. No, I am always amazed at artists. It's just in your head and it just has to come out. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So when I was watching you, I think it was a blue piece that you were doing, and I think it was different blues. Anyway, you're sitting on the floor there with the bead boxes and one of your children playing on the side, and all I could think is, oh no, beads everywhere. But so you're just seeing that. So there's no drawing ahead of time This is where I'm headed with this thing. You just let it come out of your head and
I kind of like a rough sketch, but then I always realize that the rough sketch that I do, it never looks like how I've drawn it. So I've kind of learned to trust the process. And even though I might sketch a design or something that I want it to look, it's not always going to look like that. It's, in fact, most of the time it looks opposite to that. But I guess that sketch is sort of like a guide.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of, that's how it starts. I start off with a sketch, and then I build with the beads and with the, and I guess it kind of just forms a pattern.
Okay. So the sketch just gets you in the ball game.
Yes, of course. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. And then I want to get some tips in here for people who work with beads, because I'm sure that you can offer some of that. But it looks like, for the most part, you're using a transparent thread.
Yeah, I always liked, I initially was using, because I had loads of threads from just collecting them over the years. And I always used to use colored thread before. But then because my work is so 3D, the colored thread would start to show through my beads. And I always wanted the focus to be on the bead and not on the actual threads or anything like that showing through. And then I kind of stopped using these colored threads and started just using transparent thread, and made my pieces just solely about the beads and not about anything else.
Okay. Because, yeah, I can see how the thread could add to the art or detract, yeah, depending on exactly what you do. Yeah.
Exactly.
So these days it's mostly transparent because it gets in the way of the beads.
Yes. For me anyway, some people like using colored thread, depending on their style of the way they bead as well. All my stuff is quite 3D, so you can just imagine if there's loads of threads like showing here and there if a piece is heavily beaded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can see if you could see the threads, or they were immediately visible, especially as you get dimension. Yeah. Then your eye starts following the lines of the threads, and then you lose lose the impact. Yeah. Okay, I see that. So are you a bead snob, or is it whatever beads do the job? That's a new term I just made up.
I was going to say, I've never heard that before.
You can have that. You can use that.
No, I wouldn't say. I'm the sort of person, well, when I did start collecting beads and started doing beadwork, I'm the sort of person that you can sell me any type of bead and I would want to buy it. I didn't care until I actually understood the different effects of beads. Then I started, like, obviously I was more thoughtful about the type of beads that I bought. But I guess deep down inside, I'm still that sort of girl that I'm always going to be quite intrigued. If I see a box of different beads, I'm always going to want to have a little nose or something.
So you're a bead hoarder then?
maybe initially, but not now, because obviously my work is more focused. I have more of a direction. So mm-hmm. I would only now sort of pick beads that are in line with what I'm doing, as opposed to just buying loads and loads and loads, which I know someone can easily get into, especially when you first start off.
Oh yeah, I can imagine it can get out of control in a hurry. Yeah.
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 But once you have a good understanding of the different bead types and the different effects that beads can create to your work, you become more thoughtful as to what you buy.
Yeah. Now, when you sketch out something, and then is the next step is what beads to use? Is it basically a process of, I mean, the beads are obviously the paint. So a process of laying out boxes of beads and finding the palette you want to use?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I do. Once I sketch it out, I'll know that, okay, my work follows a pattern. There's always shade, there's always light, there's always reflection. So once I kind of have those like 4 or 5 points ticked, I then move to, okay, the colors. And then I will start looking for colors from my collection. Okay, what color inside here matches the brief for reflection? What color matches the brief for depth? What color matches the brief for light? So that way, I then pick the colors according to that, and then I just start having to play with the beads on the fabric.
And just let it go. And fabric is standard muslin or?
I use cotton, so I use either cotton or calico. Yeah, those are the two that I often use.
Okay, so nothing fancy there, just.
No, because the fabric is just the base.
Right.
The beads is what's most important to me anyway. So, and it's not as if my fabric ever shows. Mm-hmm. Well, it depends. With my portrait work, obviously, sometimes I tend to leave the fabric blank, but most of the time the fabric doesn't really show. So, I don't really put so much emphasis on the fabric. It's more so of the beads.
It just holds them. the beads.
Exactly.
Now that's some of those pieces. I would think that the beads start to get quite heavy for the fabric. As you're stitching, does that get to be an issue for you, or is the hoop holding it tight enough that it really doesn't matter?
Yeah, exactly. The embroidery hoop holds it, stretches it out in place so that everything stays firm. So when I do bead, everything stays firm in place.
And then if you frame it or something, you always have a back on it to...
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, to hold it up. Because, yeah, a couple of those there, they look like they get pretty heavy.
They're not too heavy. Again, that's part of the kind of illusion. They're not quite heavy.
Hmm. Okay. I'm just thinking stitching on a hoop, at some point the cloth starts to sag, but maybe not. Yeah.
But with the embroidery hoop, it stretches the fabric.
Right.
It's only if you take it out of the embroidery hoop that it might start to sag and like shrivel up. But once it's always stretched in place, everything will kind of hold its shape.
Yeah. Yeah. Now the portrait part is because you have your really abstract thing, and then you start doing portraits. And I'll butcher this name. Is it Frida Kahlo?
Yeah. Like, how did I even get into portrait work? I think
that would be my question. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I would have that question. How'd you do that?
How did I get into portrait work? It was I think I initially, when I first started doing bead work, I think I sketched a face and I made it really abstract because obviously that's what I'm kind of, that's the sort of style I'm into. So, but then I kind of put it aside and then was just focusing on, because I was so enticed by the color, by picking beads that had different depth, the light and all of that, I kind of was more focused on creating shapes with mm-hmm. the beads that I had and the reflection and all of that. And then I think after I finished one of my abstract pieces, I was kind of thinking about, okay, what can I do next? What can I do next? And in the process of that, I remembered that, oh yeah, I actually sketched a design that was abstract, but then still kind of looked, you know, still life or something. And then I was like, you know what, that's going to be my next project. And then I was looking for an iconic figure. I was looking for something that someone that I can like that be that would reflect that sort of style. And then I think I chose her, and then it kind of took off from there with portrait work.
Because it's interesting, and what little exposure I've had to artists who draw and paint, and what I've read is that human shapes are, if you don't just get them as an artist, they're difficult to get right. And so when you go from your abstract things to portraits, that seems like a giant leap to me, because you pull it. I mean, the work, you know, it's not like they're weird faces. They look. They have the shape and the look that you would expect for a human form. And so it must, did it just come to you, or do you have to work pretty hard at that?
I guess all of my pieces are always experimental. So I tend to kind of, I'll place some of the beads on the fabric, and if I like the way it looks, I continue. But if I feel as if like, okay, this area looks a bit distorted too much, or this area is not really reflecting the sort of angle that I need it to be, I'll unpick it and then I'll start again till I get it right. So it's always kind of like I just experiment until I get it the way I want it to look.
Okay. All right. That's trying to understand the process. It fascinates me. Yeah, it really does. Yep. And unpicking. Okay. Everybody hates unpicking, but unpicking beads has got to be a nightmare.
Yeah. Especially if it's like, it's a continuous loop that I've done, but I guess it's part, it's, I've learned to enjoy the process. If I can say, because I know like the reward, it's rewarding the outcome. So I learned to trust the process.
Yeah. Okay. Unpicking a string of beads though. Jeez. I would scream things.
I don't do it so much now, more so much in the beginning when I was still learning and trying to understand.
Yeah.
But now there's less unpicking but more beading.
Okay. All right. Good. I'm glad to hear that. Glad to hear that. So let's talk about, see if we can get some tips in here for people who do beads. How do you manage beads when you're stitching? You have a tray, a sticky surface. Talk about your needles, those kinds of things that everybody who does any bead work at all could benefit from.
I think once you have the right supplies, first of all, you get yourself an embroidery hoop, you get yourself a piece of fabric, and then you get yourself a long beading needle. And I always use transparent thread, but anybody that's into beading, they can either use transparent thread or they can use colored like metallic threads or any sort of type of thread that they have at home. And I always have little tins or little trays that I put all my different beads in. And sometimes I start off that way and having like each color in a different tin, but I notice that by the end of each project all the colors are end up going into one tin, because I like to pick whichever color I want at a time. So sometimes when it's all together, I don't know, that sort of inspires me to create different sort of patterns and shapes when it's all together. Whereas sometimes if it's all in separate tins, I guess there's less of a process there. You're more like, okay, it has to look like this, it has to look like that, right. It has to go a certain way. So it just also depends on the type of artist or type of artist the person is. But as long as you have the basics, which is good sturdy fabric, an embroidery hoop, some good beading needles. You can test whether you want to try the short beading needles or long beading needles. I tend to kind of use a mix, and you get yourself some good beads that have different characteristics and some jars, and you kind of can take it from there.
It was interesting that I was hoping you would talk about that mixture of beads in a tray, because in one of the videos or photos I saw of you, you had some beads of one color. It looked like they were off to the side, if I recall correctly. Yeah. And then there was just a bunch mixed in. And I thought, there's the artist palette right there. Here's just mixing the paints, because I could see that evolving in your head just from that picture.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of that's what I mean about not following a particular pattern when they're all kind of in separate tins. But I guess somehow I always like, let me just have them all together. And then I kind of just, I can easily just pick. And sometimes the way they form the different colors as well, that inspires you to be, that inspires your colorways.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you're done and those beads have to be separated back into their boxes, is that where your husband comes in? Your people.
Sometimes I kind of just, if I'm desperate for a particular bead type, I would actually separate them. Or there's sometimes when I'm not so busy and I would separate them. But most of the time, I just close the tin. And when I'm doing another project and I want like that sort of, when I want that sort of colorway, I'll just pick up that tin and work from there.
Okay, that's fun. Because I would want to put them all back in their respective boxes.
No, sometimes I do. If I actually really, really need the one particular color and I've run out.
Yeah.
Then I would separate them. But majority of the time, I kind of close the tin. And when I want to do another project, I pick up the tin again.
Hey, that's great. Now, I have visions of a cabinet full of boxes of beads.
Yes, I have. I have tons and tons of beads in different jars and containers that I have in my storage unit in the house.
And do we have so many that you really don't know what you have, that each time you look for colors, it's a whole new exploration?
Yes and no. Sometimes I like to always take pictures of my artwork once I've created them. So I would always look back at them and be like, okay, I like this shade, or I like this texture of the bead or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll kind of like use that as a form of my next collection or my next project that I'm working on. And then I'll revisit back that bead.
Yeah.
So sometimes I do, and then sometimes I don't.
Now, seed beads primarily, or a mixture of sizes?
Yeah, I use seed beads, which obviously they're really small ones. I use Japanese beads. I use the Toho beads. It just, I've over the years, I've just been, just always search for different types of beads, and I've just kind of collected them. And I always like my pieces to have a variety of bead types, so that whoever views it or whoever buys my work can be like, okay, I've never seen that type of bead before. I didn't know this sort of bead existed.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't pick up on that looking at your pieces. So if I had one of those in my hand, then I would see different shapes and sizes of beads that are also adding to the expression of the art.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, okay. What fun. And that, you see that in your head too, huh?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, I know. It just comes to you. You can't help it. Yeah. So when do we start the business? What says to you, all right, enough of this art. I need to, or I can make a business out of this, or I want to make a business because I want to share with others. What was the catalyst there?
I set up an Instagram page, and a lot of my friends and family started following me. And initially I was just doing it for a bit of fun, and they were like, oh, I should start selling my pieces. And then I started getting inquiries about other people wanting to learn beadwork and to start their own sort of beads and bead journey. So I was like, okay, alongside my portrait work, alongside my artwork, why don't I start teaching whoever wants to know, some of the things I've picked up along the way, some of the things I know about beads, some of the things I know about how to create different shapes with beads, the colors, the style. And I started getting more and more people inquire, and I was just like, okay, let me start selling kits. Let me start selling my knowledge with what I've gained. And that's kind of how the business side sort of kicked in.
Mm-hmm. Well, first I have to say, you win the Packaging Month of the Month award, because your kit boxes are things of beauty in their own right. Wow. That's to get one of those in the mail would be a real treat. I mean, that is full metal there. That's good.
I guess deep down, there's that kid in me that loves the whole excitement of opening up a present. And I want my customers to have that same excitement. Just because it's fabrics or needles or beads doesn't mean it can't be presented in a way that they too would kind of see that excitement as well. Mm-hmm. or feel that excitement. I'm really, really excited and enthusiastic about my beads. And I remember receiving my first little, you know, going to the shop and buying them. And I kind of want my customers to feel that way, to feel that excitement and joy. So I always love to present it in a way that they will feel as if it's a present to them and a present to them to learn.
Well, it works, because I found watching at least one of the videos where you were opening one of the kit boxes, and yeah. I caught myself leaning forward into into the screen, because, ooh, what's under here? What's, oh, look at that. And then you lift off that big piece of cotton batting or whatever it is, and there they all are. And I caught myself. I literally had leaned forward to see what was there. So it works.
That's the excitement that I want people to have. I want people to want to know what's inside, to want to test it out, because that's how you're going to learn if you're excited to want to know how these things work. So,
yep. Well, success there. Yeah. Yep. So if I order a kit, all right, tell me what I'm getting when I order a kit. Is it a project? Is it a, here's a set of things, see what you can do with it. How are you going about that?
Well, with the kit, I wanted it to be like an all-in-one box. I didn't want my customers to have to go around sourcing different things. So in the kit, I include everything you would need in order to kickstart your own embroidery project. So it has the fabric, it has two cloths of fabrics, it has a variety of different sizes of needles in order for you to see which one is more suitable to you. It has the transparent threads that I personally use, and it also gives you metallic threads and some of the boxes in order for you to kind of to compare the different threads that you can use. And then it gives you a variety of different bead types. It gives you beads that are pearly beads. It gives you beads that are high in shine, that are metallic, that are, you know, that attract light, that are opaque. It allows you to kind of to fully understand the different types of beads that there are out there in just one little box anyway. And inside the box as well, there's a manual, and in the manual it talks about my embroidery journey, what I've learned, my different techniques that I have, how I kind of combined my art style into my bead work, how I layer fabric, how I layer the beads together. It just gives you an insight it's targeted towards people new to beading, but if you're an established beader as well and you just want to learn a different style of beading, it is also suitable for them as well. So it's just a case of someone to learn a new skill and to learn bead work in a different way.
Okay, and so then if I buy a kit, if I buy a box, then I'm buying all the devices I need, all the artwork pieces I need to create something that comes out of my head.
Yes, as well, I've also started incorporating patterns.
Okay.
Because I know not everybody would have that fluidity. Not everybody is that, you know, that good with just picking up a fabric and, you know, designing different shapes. So
Thank you. Because I can't.
I started incorporating patterns because I understand that not everybody's like that. So, you know, so there's kits for people that are just fascinated to learn and experiment, and there's kits for people that are not so familiar with, you know, the different, not so familiar with artistry, that they want a bit more direction. Mm-hmm. So there's a kit target towards them as well.
Okay. So I get some help. Okay. Cause otherwise I'm lost. Otherwise I just lay the beads out and look at them. So.
So I've tried to kind of create that sort of balance between the two sort of customer types.
Yeah. Okay. And then a new product coming up, got anything new headed down the road here?
Yes. I've started creating a new product. It's a new kit, and it's a bit more about my sort of like stylistic way, in the sense of I want to further unleash the inner creativity of my customers. So I'm going to be releasing a product and a new kit that has an abstract pattern, so that people also familiarize themselves with my style of work and they kind of recreate it themselves. So whereas before, some of my patterns, they were more like real life, but I've been getting loads of people asking me, oh, I want to do beading the way you do it. I want to learn beading the way you do it. I know you sell kits that are standalone, and I know you sell kits that have patterns, but I want to do it how you do it. So that sort of motivated me. Okay, I'm going to listen to what some of my customers are saying, and I'm going to create a box that gives them more about how I work. So that's sort of the next project I'm working on.
Okay. That's fun. That's beyond me, I think, but I think it's fun. Yeah. Well, it's hard. For me, it is hard to, you know, I mean, I work at changing colors in needlework, but for me to take a piece and just kind of go off and do something completely different is hard for me. But I admire people who can do that and see it in their heads. Not my makeup.
The new kit would include a pattern, so it would include a pattern for them to test out.
Okay.
So even though they might not necessarily know, like, oh, I'm not too familiar with how I'm meant to do it, there's a pattern that guides them. So it's kind of like 50-50. I'm sort of pushing their inner creativity out.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I could do that, but
hopefully when you see it, you might be convinced. Hopefully when you see the outcome as well, it might convince you.
Yeah. Well, and there's a freedom to that, I would think. There's a real freedom once you get over that hump of, wait a minute, I can just kind of just go do whatever and see how it works out. Yeah.
I'm quite excited to start, and I'm excited to launch it, and I'm hoping that it's going to be received well from a lot of my customers.
So when you do the new kit, then is it a supply of beads that allows me plenty of beads to experiment and play with?
Yes, exactly. It has enough supplies for you to do two projects. So the first project that you probably do is that you'd follow the pattern and the guide that I've given you. And then the remaining supplies, it allows you to kind of do your own thing and experiment with what you've learned.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Now I'm seeing the progression. Okay, good. Good.
Yeah.
I can see where I might actually be successful with it. All right. So now is some kind of teaching support coming along with this?
I'm hoping. I've been getting inquiries if I do online courses, which I haven't started doing yet, but I'm hoping to progress into doing online courses as well for those that want to further learn more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I would think that would be the next thing, because you could, people who are struggling a little bit, you could kind of nudge them along. Try this, see if you don't like it.
I'm thinking about doing workshops where people are invited in and, you know, they're given kits and we just all have fun learning and experimenting.
Now there's a vision. Big tables covered with beads. Beads everywhere.
For everyone to kind of like to learn and to experiment and have fun with.
Your core business though is still creating art for sale.
Yeah, the artwork that I've been doing, I'm selling my artwork as well, but then I get loads of people wanting to learn how to create the sort of artwork that I do, and just they're just genuinely intrigued. So I'm beginning to adapt my business plan in order to incorporate the two aspects, artwork for sale and obviously teaching and enable others to kickstart their own embroidery projects.
But never giving up the art, because that's you.
Yes, exactly. I've learned that I've become a teacher as well, even though I didn't intend to. So.
Well, it's the world we're in, and it's your customer base. It's people want to make things, so you got to help them make them.
Yeah, exactly.
So, all right, so you got two young children.
Yes.
Your mother, two young children, husband, home, all the things that go with that. How do you find time to do this?
I guess because my kids were quite young before. I've got a 2-year-old and a 1-year-old, and I used to kind of do bead work around their naps and their playtime and stuff, and I'll try to do bead work in the evening. So I kind of have a routine that, okay, get up in the morning, mommy head, and in between naps, bead work, and then once they're in bed, I do my beading as well. And I'd obviously spend time with my husband.
Yeah, five minutes of the day here.
I tend to do bead work when everyone's either asleep or whenever my husband's at work or something. So, mm-hmm.
So you're just fitting it in wherever you can.
Yeah, and I've learned to bead fast as I've kind of over the years. So I when I do bead, I make sure to bead as much as I can.
I got a half hour nap. I can bead. How many can I get in a half hour? Yep. Yeah. Do you play speed games with yourself? How many can I get in a minute and 2 minutes? And
no, I think I used to sometimes just kind of like, I used to be like, oh, let me see how much I can do while they're asleep or something. But now I guess sometimes that also spoils the fluidity of the work because yes. I want my pieces to be beautiful and not to feel rushed. Right. So I tend to kind of, I know when to not do bead and that it's going to be rushed. I tend to put it down when I know I'm not in the headspace to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Cause you'll end up just not liking it or having to throw it away or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep. Well, it's fascinating work, Cecilia. It's beautiful work. It's fascinating too. What you accomplish. Yeah. Gorgeous stuff. So, people can, have links to the website so people can go there and you have a shop so they can purchase the kits. And, so people can do that. They can see your artwork there and obviously follow you on Instagram and see all of your work. So that's good. Yep.
Yeah.
And every now and then we catch a glimpse of one of your children. So that's a good thing too.
Yeah.
They tend to show up. They tend to show up.
I know, here and there. Yep. That's how they are when I'm doing beading. When I think, oh, they're occupied or something, you just see one of them pop behind me or something like that. And I always love to just capture those moments here and there.
Yep. Well, the colors, I mean, kids and colors. Yeah.
Yeah. They're always enticed by the colors.
Yep. That's right. Cecilia, thank you so much. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thanks to everyone for listening.